We have just over 2 weeks before Election Day. This hour, Pints and Politics, presented by the Gazette and Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer with this special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, along with my co-host this hour, Jennifer Hemmingson of the Gazette, and we're coming to you from CSPS in Cedar Rapids in an event recorded before a live audience. Joining us are tried and true pontificators of politics and profundity this session, Gazette political investigative reporter James Lynch, Gazette columnist Todd Dorman, and Linda Waddington. Pints and Politics is just ahead. First, this news from NPR. There are just over 2 weeks before Election Day, and of course the big question is not who will win, but will we survive this campaign? We have gathered once again before a live audience in Cedar Rapids. I'm Ben Kiefer of Iowa Public Radio News. This is a special edition of River to River, another edition of Pints and Politics.
And I'm Jennifer Hemmingson, opinion editor at the Gazette, and we're joined today by Gazette investigative and political reporter James Lynch. Gazette columnist Linda Waddington. And Gazette columnist Todd Dorman. I want to take a quick second to thank our sponsors who make this all possible. We want to thank our series sponsor, ITC Midwest. Our community partner, the Linn County Auditor's Office Voter Outreach Program. Our media partner, Imon Communications. And special thanks to CSPS and Legion Arts for hosting us in this beautiful space.
So here we go. We've gathered here once again just over 2 weeks before Election Day. How many of you in our audience, we have 150, 200 people here perhaps. Let's just get a poll of how many of you have already voted? So it's estimated, it's kind of like drying cement, isn't it, the further we go towards Election Day. And we've had another, the final presidential debate this week. So what do you say, Jennifer, we start off with our panelists and get their views on what happened. And we do know the headline from that debate, don't we?
Yes, we do, and I think we're going to get to that shortly.
Okay.
But first, let's talk a little bit about general impressions. What were you expecting going into that debate? A lot of heat going into that debate. James, was it what you expected when you're looking at people's analysis? What were the big takeaways besides the big takeaways?
Well, going into it, I thought one of two things. Either Trump would just let it all fly. You know, the shackles are off. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I mean, I don't think it was good. But he didn't seem to do that. It was more, you know, he was more subdued, stayed on point most of the night. It didn't have the entertainment value that some of the previous debates have had, but that's probably good. And it was interesting how Hillary Clinton sort of turned the tables, sometimes interrupting Donald Trump, sort of throwing a few jibes in there, jokes, sort of toying with him. But in terms of, if you look at all three of them, I think this may have been the best debate in terms of substance and actually talking about some policy, not the policy they were asked about, but some policy.
Linda, how about you? What were your impressions?
I think the bar was pretty darn low for Donald Trump before we went into this debate. And I think it was actually lowered some for Hillary Clinton going into this debate as well. So I'm not sure anything from last night could have actually changed the trajectory of this race, short of someone literally falling on their face. We did get more discussion on some issues, which was really good to hear. But, you know, I keep getting stuck on Putin's puppets.
And it's the name of my new band, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not a puppet, you're a puppet.
Oh, no, you're the puppet. You're the puppet. It was like...
Such a nasty woman.
I
knew that was coming.
I kept waiting. I was driving here from Iowa City pretty frantically because I thought I was going to be late, and I kept going, the boys are going to go wrong. Nope.
Boys will be boys.
You know, I used to lead a troop of Brownie Girl Scouts, and part of the debate last night was watching the troop interact with one another, which I think was really disappointing to see that on this level of politics in our country.
Todd, what do you think?
I kept thinking that the writers for Saturday Night Live are going to have a hard time topping the actual debate. I mean, you've got Chinese Steel, you've got Nasty Woman, you've got, well, the small matter of not accepting the outcome of an American presidential election. You've got the Arizona Tarmac came up, which I thought would make a good band name. As you mentioned, Putin's Puppet, which another good band name, perhaps. So, I mean, Bad Hombres, exactly. Exactly. I almost forgot Bad Hombres. So lots of good band names. But, you know, it was the fact that this was the most substantive of the three debates is really sort of sad in a lot of ways because, I mean, it was in many ways sort of an exchange of sort of nasty one-liners and an exchange of, you know, what both candidates are trying to paint each other, you know, crooked Hillary and, unhinged Donald, and that's what we got. I find myself glad that there's not a fourth debate, although it might have been good television. One more, maybe one more the night before the election, just for fun.
Well, or the night after, because it may still be up in the air.
Right. A perfect dovetail in what we wanted to, the headline after the debate and for several days, asked if he would accept the results of this election. Mr. Trump, who has repeatedly predicted a rigged election, refused to commit. He said, I will look at it at the time. He said something like, I'll keep you in suspense. So Democrats condemning this, but also many in the Republican Party condemning this. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this, especially if we've ever had anything like this happen before.
I don't think so. And I mean, I don't know what word to describe it, but I mean, to say I might not accept it, I'm going to keep you in suspense. I mean, you know, you go back to 2000 and Al Gore didn't accept the results, and with good reason. And a lot of Democrats still haven't accepted the results of the 2000
election.
But
he didn't forecast it before the election.
Exactly. To go into, you know, 2 weeks ahead of the election to say, well, I might not accept the results. I think it's just beyond the pale, unless it's just Donald toying with us. But even then, there's no room for that. I think the condemnation last night and today from both Democrats and Republicans is indicative of the way serious people think about the election and what he said.
Yeah, I did hear that Trump was in Ohio today, and he said he will abide by the election results if he wins. I am not joking.
That takes a little of the suspense out of it, though, because now we know how he'll react to one possible outcome.
True.
And that's important.
But do you all think he's being serious, or do you think that was just sort of a top-of-the-head Donald Trump answer?
There's a part of me that says a lot of what he says, he's just playing with us. And that's one of them. But, I mean, it's not something we should be sort of joking around about. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks that a lot of the stuff he says that's sort of out there is just Donald Trump. It's his character. It's kind of the class clown sort of character. Some of the things he says, some of the things he does, and I think he's just sort of toying with us. He knows he's going to get a reaction.
So how is his party? He is the nominee, presidential nominee of the Republican Party, of course. So how are they doing? Would they be described as twisting in the wind here, hanging there? Because Have any of the Republicans backed this idea that we have fraud, election fraud, so significant that it could change an election?
You know, I actually want to go back to that point where we're talking about this whole idea that all of our elections are rigged and that we have rampant voter fraud. We don't. We don't. And a lot of times at these events, I brought up the fact that I think the extremes have kind of taken over the major parties, and this is a very good example. You know, we've had a party who found it politically expedient to allow those fringe elements to have the floor and push that narrative, and this is where we end up. And that's the big problem with allowing those extreme views to rule the stage. Even though it's going to help you in the short term, it's going to come back and bite you in the long term.
Which is a huge problem in politics today, is everybody's looking for a short-term gain and not looking down the road. You know, so we get these sorts of things. We get the terrible, you know, campaigns, the campaign ads that we all look at and try to turn away from because they're so negative and so ugly. And everybody's just looking for a short-term gain and not thinking, what are the consequences if the Tea Party takes over the Republican Party? Oh, we get Donald Trump. You know, a lot of Democrats back in the 60s, you know, had a similar experience when young voters took over the caucuses and the primaries and dramatically changed the party. Now, you young people back then who control the party now may not find that so distasteful. You know, but 20 years from now, if the people who put Donald Trump in the nomination are running the Republican Party, you know, what is that going to mean for the country?
Well, and I mean, you know, Donald Trump talks a lot about how we don't know how to win anymore, but the problem is we don't know how to lose. I mean, we've had the entire Obama presidency looking for his birth certificate and all sorts of other reasons why he's illegitimate. We've had congressional elections where, you know, after congressional elections, you know, one side, you know, the side that loses still continues to obstruct the agenda of the side that wins. I mean, we've just got a lot of this ingrained now. And part of it is because we wage these campaigns where we're saying if the other side wins, the country will be destroyed. So it's hard to compromise and it's hard to accept defeat when basically you've painted a picture where defeat is unthinkable. So that's kind of the situation that we're in. We, you know, a lot of politicians just don't know how to gracefully bow out. I think maybe a lot of you have seen on social media this week the George H.W. Bush letter that he left in you know, the Oval Office desk for Bill Clinton to see, this sort of gracious, magnanimous message to the next president. He was from a generation that understood that, and it seems like somewhere we've kind of lost our way on that.
Well, and I can attest to the fact, and I'm hearing from readers who say that they agree, yeah, the election is rigged. And I think that what they're talking about is that they don't think that the media coverage has been equitable. They don't think that, you know, for whatever reason, the candidates are being treated fairly by either their peers or the media or whoever. But what they're saying is that the election is rigged. And when I try and have a conversation about, you know, there are countries where the elections are rigged and this is different, they don't want to hear it or they can't hear it. Do you think that this campaign or this trajectory over the last 20 years is doing permanent, long-term or permanent damage to our electorate? I mean, are we just so out there that it's hard for us to make important distinctions?
Yeah, I think it's very hard to live in this country when you have elected officials telling you that you can't trust your own government. And I think that's a big problem. And that's kind of been the message. And it hasn't just been Republican. It's been on the Democratic side as well, that maybe we can't trust these budget figures, that we have better ones over here. Or maybe we can't trust these unemployment figures because they aren't including this, that, or that. And I don't know what that is. You can use it, Todd. You can have it.
How do you spell that?
Wrong. But I think it is an issue when you've been told that you can't trust the institutions that are kind of governing public policy and directing what's going on. The EPA is evil, right? We've all heard that. The Department of Education doesn't care about local school districts. We've heard that. There's a lot of different things out there. So how do you move beyond that and look more at that nuanced conversation of, I think this thing is evil because I disagree with it?
A question from our audience here at CSPS in Cedar Rapids that follows into this discussion that I could just throw in here. The questioner in our audience asks, if Trump doesn't win, do you think he will start a revolution? I'll add to that, is that possible?
I think he'll start a television network.
There you go.
I think he's going to make a lot of noise for a while, but I don't see him sticking with it. The problem is that if voters, you know, believe him that this election was rigged and they don't accept, you know, it doesn't really matter if Donald accepts the results or not because the results are going to be the results. But his supporters, if they don't accept the results, that's where the long-term damage can come in because it really feeds into everything that Linda was talking about. We don't trust our government. We don't trust the numbers they give us. And if you can't trust the government, why pay taxes? Why follow the law? Then that is a problem. But I think Trump himself, he'll lose interest. He'll find a network, a TV network that needs starting or a pageant that needs a sponsor or whatever.
So you say his plan B is to make sure that his brand, the Trump brand, is not tarnished so much that he can't go on outside of politics.
Well, and I think some of that brand going forward will be the sort of grievance that somehow he was robbed. I think that will sort of form the basis for whatever. If he decides to do a television network, it's basically going to be a place where all of the folks who, you know, he can have a show where, you know, Rudy Giuliani and all these folks, Newt Gingrich, can come on and talk about, you know, how the election was rigged and how next time will be different. I think part of that is what he's doing, is sort of sustaining this idea that it's not something wrong with him that caused him to lose this election. It's something wrong with the system, and so that he continues to be a marketable brand.
So this is the first step in a GoFundMe campaign.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know how many of you were on Twitter last night watching during the debate, but when Trump started talking about things being rigged, and this is rigged and that is rigged, nearly immediately the Hillary Clinton campaign released a set of tweets that he had done previously about the Emmys and about all of these other things that when he was expected to lose, suddenly it was rigged.
Is there a concern, though, maybe not about revolution, but about violence? I know the Southern Poverty Law Center has been tacking an uptick in hate groups. You know, people are really riled up about this election. So this is a question from the audience. Do we have to worry about violence, maybe specifically against, do we have to worry about a President Hillary Clinton's safety or other types of violent behavior?
You know, you've had the Southern Poverty Law Center. I don't know how many of you follow their work, but they recently have done a campaign to announce that two of their people, they had credible threats against their lives because of the things that they've been posting about right-wing violence and white supremacists and other things, the work that they do. And that's a little scary to think about that. These people had to take their families and put their families into hiding because of these credible threats against them. And they caught the guys. That's the good news. They did catch the guys. But, you know, that might be the type of world, at least to a certain extent, that we're moving into.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing that we always said, that doesn't happen here in America. You know, we accept the results of the election. We have a peaceful transition of leadership. And we don't have... You know, we don't have revolutions and those sorts of things after the election. I don't know if we'll have violence because I'm not sure that a lot of the people who are Trump followers really have that much direction that they would do that. And on the other hand, you have the news reports in the last couple of days that it's the Clinton campaign, or at least the allies of the Clinton campaign, who are hiring people to go to rallies and incite violence. No one will confirm that, the people who bragged about it have retired or been forced out of their jobs. It's an ugly picture pretty much from any angle. Which is really disconcerting.
Which, just to add to your last comment there, James, this was also a question from the audience. Questioner asks, what do you think now that we find out that they were paid $500 to start fights by the Democrats connected with Hillary at the Trump campaign events? PolitiFact We did some quick fact-checking here. The nonpartisan PolitiFact has refused to rate that as true or untrue, saying too much remains unknown, exactly what you said.
I wish I had known about it sooner because, you know, going to these rallies, I could have picked up some easy money. You know, I have to be there anyway. So.
Well, you already had a broken arm.
Yeah, I had a broken arm, so I heck yes. $500?
I guess, Jennifer, did you have something?
Well, yeah, I was going to. I think it's these kinds of revelations that are making voters say there is just no truth. There's no end to this rabbit hole. There's no way for me to figure out who the crookeder person is. So do you think that a lot of people are just going to be going with their gut, or are you worried a lot of people are going to stay home?
Yes. There's some polling, Gallup polling, for example, has found there's less enthusiasm for voting this year than, say, 4 years ago. It's not hard to imagine why there's less enthusiasm, but, yeah, that's a concern if people stay home. And then it's just that many more people who say, well, that wasn't my decision. Don't blame me.
Let's poll our audience, absolutely unscientific poll, our audience here at CSPS in Cedar Rapids, on that very point. Clap if you are – we have the two most unpopular major party candidates for president in recent memory, perhaps ever. Clap if you are so dissatisfied with both candidates that you would like to be a genie who could snap two different candidates to take their places into existence. Clap if you believe that. Okay. Clap if you're worried this election may be impacted, as Donald Trump does, by significant voter fraud. Okay. Clap if you're worried that this ordeal may not be over on November 9th. Okay. A little bit of polling right here among our panelists. What else do we want to talk about as far as the debate last night? We had, of course, the allegations of sexual violence, sexual assault. What do our panelists think about what happened at that point in the discussion last night?
You go back to when that video came out. And didn't you get the impression that somewhere in Washington in a basement was a group of elderly political strategists who were scratching their heads going, why are women so protective of their house cats? I mean, you know, and the truth is that I want to believe that. I want to believe that they're not into the slang, you know, they're not on the Twitters, and they don't really know what...
Okay.
That was said, because the alternative is that we have this whole set of political folks, strategists, elected officials, candidates, who didn't have anything to say against that. And that's horrible. I'd much rather think that they're just ignorant than think they're being willfully sexist.
This is a special edition of Pints and Politics, a live public event recorded at CSPS in Cedar Rapids. I'm Ben Kiefer with co-host Jennifer Hemmingson of The Gazette, as well as Linda Waddington, Todd Dorman, and James Lynch. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about the congressional races here in Iowa, if there's any so-called down-ballot effect. Also, the question of will the GOP here in Iowa take control of the Iowa Senate? We'll be back in just a moment with more of Pints of Politics. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with another special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Pints and Politics, presented by The Gazette and Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, along with co-host Jennifer Hemmingson, and we're here, as we have been so many times in the past and enjoyed it so much, with, 150, 200 people here at CSPS in Cedar Rapids. And along with us, we have Linda Waddington, columnist for The Gazette, Todd Dorman, columnist, and James Lynch, Gazette political reporter. We are, almost there, 2 weeks in front of Election Day, November 8th, and besides asking the question, will we survive? When will this end? We're digging to some other questions, Jennifer. And in the first part of our program, we were talking about the debate that happened, the final presidential debate that happened this week between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Just to kind of finish up on that, WikiLeaks has been a big part of this campaign. And on the last debate, Chris Wallace, the moderator, quoted a paid Clinton speech citing an excerpt revealed by WikiLeaks in which she dreamt of a, quote, open trade and open borders. Clinton said she was talking about energy. But then it started to get interesting in Clinton saying the more pressing issue was from the leaked documents was the specter of the Russian government engaging in espionage against Americans, suggesting that Russian President Vladimir Putin had a clear favorite in the race. Trump saying, I don't know Putin. And Mrs. Clinton saying that Putin would prefer, quote, a puppet as a president of the United States. Mr. Trump shot back, you're the puppet. Okay, pick that apart, panel. Is it a presidential debate or are we on some school ground at an elementary school? You're the puppet.
No, I'm not. You're a puppet. Takes one to know one. I think it's really concerning when you think about if Putin and the Russian government is behind hacking emails and if they're trying to influence this election. The problem I have with this is that I can't quite imagine Donald Trump as anybody's puppet. I mean, who's going to control him? I don't see that part of it. But I mean, it is concerning if the Russian government is doing this hacking and releasing these emails in an attempt to influence the outcome of the election. But they're really interesting emails. I have to say that.
Talk a little bit about that. In a normal election year, where Trump would not, a candidate like Trump would not be overshadowing these allegations against the Clinton campaign, WikiLeaks would have been a significant talking point and perhaps a downfall of a candidate. Would it not have been?
Probably. But, yeah, Trump sort of, like, overshadows everything. So these emails don't get the attention that perhaps they should. It's interesting. There doesn't seem to be any smoking gun. There are a lot of things that are sort of distasteful, sort of, I think when you read them, you say, like, well, yeah, that's the way politicians talk. That's the way campaign staffs talk. They say things that when somebody outside the conversation reads it, it sounds really derogatory to Jewish voters or Catholic voters or, whoever they're talking about. But I think, you know, it's sort of like the conversations you have with your circle of friends or your circle of, professional colleagues, that if somebody outside that circle reads it, it sounds pretty bad. And it might be bad, but it's sort of out of context. And like I say, I don't think there's a smoking gun in any of this that I've seen.
Now, I know that you're not talking about this being locker room talk.
This is Russian steam room talk. I think sort of the Russian... Yeah. Wait, I'm getting... My Russian's a little rusty. I'm not sure what they're telling me to say.
Well, but really, Todd and Linda, I mean, have you had a chance to look at some of these? Or is there anything in there that makes you concerned about anything that's out of the ordinary?
I think there's a lot in there that you can make a lot of political hay out of if you'd stop shooting your own foot. You know,
right.
And we saw this during the Democratic convention. Don't forget the first WikiLeaks was all about right. Bernie Sanders and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and kind of the collusion that was going on there and pushing Bernie outside the Democratic Party. And the next day, Trump attacked the Gold Star family.
Yeah.
You can't make any political hay if you're too busy, I guess, cleaning your weapons.
You know, in any conventional campaign, a lot of these things, the emails... the email controversy over the private server, the WikiLeaks emails, all of this stuff would have been blockbuster, bring down a candidate type stuff. But when you nominate Donald Trump, it's so difficult for all of that stuff to get the attention when you've got a candidate who is breaking all of the political norms. I mean, when you break all the political norms cease to sort of govern what's going on.
But is there anything in there that should disqualify Hillary Clinton from being a candidate? Is there anything that's out of the norm?
I don't think so. I mean, I haven't seen anything that I would say would disqualify her. I think there are things in there that should raise questions. In this, yeah. I think it's the latest batch where some of her speeches, her private, you know, to private groups, the Goldman Sachs, and there are a lot of issues in there, you know, free trade, open borders, all this sort of thing, that should raise a lot of questions, but it goes back to the fact that Trump then does something that just overshadows it and it kind of goes away, and so we never really get any answer to, you know, there's never any significant discussion of those issues.
So we've got other elections, believe it or not, and one of them here, one of the biggest ones here in Iowa is the election for U.S. Senate, Senator Grassley running for another term, and we have a lot of questions from the audience about that. And the first one, I think, is whether or not Grassley is competent enough to serve another term. He's getting up there. How old is he now? 83? Okay. Yeah. So, Todd Lindo, you and James, you all were in an editorial board meeting with Senator not that long ago. What did you think? Is he up for the job?
Yeah. He was on top of his game. Had answered the questions, got pretty inspired by some of the questions, took offense at some, not at the questions, but at some of the sort of the background, what other people have said about his viewpoints, and wasn't bashful in sharing his displeasure with the Wall Street Journal, among other media. His age doesn't really seem to be an issue in this election, especially the fact that he's running against a 72-year-old person. Probably, it's pretty hard to make age an issue.
Another Grassley-related question from the audience is, if Hillary is elected, would you expect President Obama's nominee to be approved before he leaves office? Supreme Court nominee.
That's.
The audience thinks
so. I think if the Democrats take over the Senate, then they will move forward with Garland. I think if the Republicans hold to the Senate, I think it's going to depend what the popular vote of the presidential election is on whether or not we move forward with any nominee.
Yeah, because they're waiting for the voice of the people, and if Hillary Clinton doesn't get 50%, then it's like, well, the voice of the people hasn't been heard, so they'll maybe block the next nominee. I mean, you can see these scenarios playing out. I mean, it's a parlor game now, but soon it will be real, but...
The other scenario
the
is
the people is funny.
The other scenario is that they decide to move ahead on the Garland nomination, and President Obama withdraws the nomination and says, "Yeah, deal with the next person."
Yeah, that's possible too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think we know. Grassley has been very insistent that he's going to wait until after the new president takes office. And you know, when John McCain said they would block any Clinton nominee, Grassley said, "No, we will consider. We will do our job." Mm-hmm. As we've said all along. So your guess is as good as ours.
Yeah. But Linda's right. If the Senate falls to the Democrats, I mean, that's...
They would have an incentive.
That would be that would change things a lot.
Speaking of congressional races, we talked about the Senate race, Charles Grassley, Patty Judge, and others from other parties competing for that Senate seat. What about the other congressional races? Do we see any connection, the so-called... down ballot effect that many Democrats had hoped for, the drag on congressional Republicans also here in Iowa, hasn't materialized? To what degree, if so?
I don't think it's obvious, although there was a poll released today by a polling firm I had never heard of before, that caveat that says that Monica Vernon's position has improved in the first district election where she's challenging Rod Blum, because they attribute it to his voters seeing a connection between Rod Blum and Donald Trump, that they're basically on the same wavelength and his numbers have gone down. Now, you know, we'll find out in, 17 days if that is indeed the case. Other polls have shown him up by as much as 16 points, so it's, you know...
Well, and
pick a poll you like.
I think at the margins it could matter. You know, if an election is super close. Maybe that matters to some voters in the middle. But Iowa sort of got this, you know, reputation for sort of the voters compartmentalizing things. I mean, I've been thinking about the 96 election where Bill Clinton won Iowa and Tom Harkin fended off a pretty strong challenge from Jim Ross Lightfoot in the Senate race. And the same night, the Democrats lost the state Senate. So it's, you know, there are a lot of precedents that were, you know, one party does well at the top of the ballot, but down ballot that didn't matter very much. The coattails were, in this case, I guess, the problems didn't go very far down and didn't affect those lower ballot races.
And I think the one district where it might have made the most difference was the second district, and you had the Republican candidate there who disavowed Donald Trump.
Right. Okay, let me remind our radio audience, you're listening to a special edition of River to River, Pints in Politics. I've been listening to James Lynch, a Gazette political reporter, also Gazette columnists Linda Waddington and Todd Dorman. I'm Ben Kiefer, along with my co-host in this special edition, Jennifer Hemmingson, before a live audience at CSPS in Cedar Rapids. So should we get back to some questions? What did you want to do, Jennifer?
Yeah, well, I think we wanted to turn to the state house races.
Yes, let's do that. We have had in the Senate now since 2011, if I'm not mistaken, a 26-24 advantage to the Democrats. Now, supposing the Democrats lose control of the Senate, the Republicans would have the House, the Senate, and the executive, the governorship. Does that fundamentally change things? I've heard one Democrat predict, well, hello, Wisconsin, we're joining you.
There is that, and Governor Branstad said if he gets a Republican Senate, you ain't seen nothing yet. And then the example he used was on water quality, that the bill that passed with bipartisan support in the House never got debated in the Senate. He said if the Republicans are in control, that'll get debated. Now, it may not get passed. It may get changed. Probably it would get changed, but it'll get debated. So we'll see those sorts of changes. Hello, Wisconsin. I think we might get closer to Wisconsin, but I would hope somebody learned from Wisconsin's experience that we probably don't want to go there.
We've heard from a number of candidates on both parties talking about how education funding, the formula should be changed. Is that something that you think is true, or are they just telling us what we want to hear, or is that something that would happen in a GOP-dominated state house?
If it's going to change, it probably would happen under one-party control, because everybody that says they want to change it, they don't all agree on how they would change it. So as long as there's split control, I don't see any significant change being made in the formula on how we fund K-12 schools. It would have to happen under one-party control.
Yeah, and if Republicans take over the legislature, I mean, there's a whole sort of spectrum on education of things that might happen, all the way from tweaking the funding formula and changing the way that's structured and when it has to be passed and all of that stuff, to, you know, all the way at the other end, providing sort of large vouchers to parents with, you know, that per pupil funding, allowing people to sort of spend that the way they'd like to. I mean, that's been talked about. The wild card, it's interesting, is that, you know, when Terry Branstad was governor the first time around, he got a full Republican legislature his last 2 years, and basically they were at loggerheads over education issues. He wanted school reforms. They wanted to pare those back and do something different. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if the agenda on education got a little too extreme, a little too anti-public education, if Terry Branstad actually would be the person that stands up and vetoes some of that stuff. I mean, I know not everyone's a Branstad fan, and I know he's done a lot of things that I've been critical of, but he, in general, I think the idea, you know, of public education and using public education as the vehicle for education in Iowa, I think he buys into that. So if they tried to make dramatic changes, it could be that the governor doesn't sit well with the governor.
Yeah, and I think when you sit down and you talk to the Republican lawmakers, when they talk about the money that's going into our schools, they always tend to bring up personnel, which goes directly to collective bargaining, and they're very discontent with the mediation process that's currently in place. So I definitely think if you had, you know, full tilt Republican across the board, that you would see changes within that system.
Here's a question that I'd like to pose and ask for a brief answer to it, drawn from a headline I think I saw in the Washington Post several weeks ago. I think it speaks for itself. Hillary Clinton, is she good or is she just lucky? Lucky in drawing Donald Trump as an opponent.
Well, I don't think anyone here would dispute if anyone else except maybe Ben Carson was the Republican nominee, that we'd have a much different election happening right now. You know, we would be talking more about WikiLeaks. We would be talking more about the Russians. We would be talking about all these other things that are getting, you know, brushed aside because we want to talk about protecting house cats and all of these other things that really don't matter in our day-to-day struggle to get through life. All right, boys, go.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, there are people have observed that if any other Republican was running this year, they would be winning hands down. And if any other Democrat was running, they would be winning hands down.
Do you agree
down.
With that out there?
No.
It's turning ugly.
It's turning
ugly. Oh, Marco Rubio would be winning right now. You know it. He'd be grabbing his water instead of, anyway.
With his little hands.
Instead of the house cat.
I thought he had the little feet.
But I got sucked into that whole
thing. No,
how did it happen? Yeah, I mean she it is luck. I mean and you know, a lot of politics is like that. You end up with an opponent that you match up with well, and that's how you win. I mean it's easier to run against a candidate that's constantly sort of, as you suggested, shooting himself in the foot and all sorts of other appendages. So,
now,
a lot of shooting.
Now,
a lot of bullets.
Now, all that being said, apologies to Ben Carson, but of all the other things being said, Hillary Clinton is probably the most experienced person in American history to run for the presidency.
It's true. It's very true.
And I don't think you go through American politics for this long without collecting a little luggage to bring along with you. And it comes down to whether or not you are willing to overlook that luggage or whether you're not. And I think what we've seen in this race on both sides of the ticket are people who aren't as willing to give anyone the benefit of the doubt.
And making history and busting barriers isn't easy. I mean, that's not something that people just sort of throw roses at your feet and let you do that. I mean, I think we found that out.
I don't disagree with what Linda said, but I think the other side of that is that while we've seen people who aren't willing to sort of forgive or whatever, we also see people who look at the choices and say, I don't care what she's done, I don't want him. Or I don't care what he says or what he grabbed, I don't want her. And so it works both ways, that people have just are finding, they're cutting slack where it suits them. They're being forgiving when it suits them and not when it when they look at the choice. If there were two different candidates, it would be I guess that's a no-brainer. It would be an entirely different race. If we switched out one of these candidates, it would be an entirely different race. It's just, this is unique.
Well, one final question, if I may, before we adjourn and reconvene with you in a few weeks' time after November 8th to pick apart this election, to talk about the victors and the vanquished. But before that, here's not so much a question as a challenge. Given that Donald Trump, in the aggregation of polls, is trailing Hillary Clinton, not only in national polls, but in virtually all the swing states that people are looking to. And I don't know if Iowa may be an exception, but Iowa hasn't had a good poll for a while. That may be the explanation for that. I would like to challenge each of you to briefly give me a plausible scenario in which Donald Trump defies the pollsters and wins this election. How might that happen? Linda.
Repeal the 19th.
Wow. The 19th giving the right of the vote to the women.
Yeah. If women can't vote, he might win. He might.
I'm going with more of an atmospheric scenario. I would say an East Coast superstorm and a West Coast tsunami. Because that's where the blue states are.
All
and
then, the blue states wiped out.
Then
people
it's,
are
then
in
it's the dry land that picks the president, and that's he does very well on dry land.
I think Donald Trump will announce in the next day or so that if elected, he will serve one day and resign. That will bring all the disaffected Republicans back to the Republican Party, and all the Hillary haters will join forces and they'll elect him.
Thank you to the Gazette for inviting us to this continued partnership. We've really enjoyed it. Jennifer, Todd, Linda, and James. And what do you say? We meet back here after the election?
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Pints and Politics, recorded yesterday evening. Our producer today, Claire Roth, sound engineer, Jim Davies. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.